Welcome to this new episode of Talking APAC. Talking APAC is a podcast series brought to you by the Australian Psychology Accreditation Council, or APAC for short. We're the organisation that ensures the quality of psychology programmes offered by higher education providers in Australia. APAC acknowledges the Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the traditional caretakers of the land, and we pay our respects to elders past and present. My name is David Glanz, and I'm recording this podcast on the land of the Wurundjeri people, one of the five Kulin nations. Now, the accreditation standards for psychology programs is the basis on which APAC recommends the accreditation of programs to the Psychology Board of Australia. And one area which sometimes creates confusion is Criterion 3.9. Now, for those of us who haven't memorised APAC standards for our bedtime reading, that's part of Standard 3, which deals with programme of study. Criterion 3.9 of that standard states, and I quote, "The application of the principles of interprofessional learning and practice is included as a required learning outcome at the appropriate level in the programme." But what is interprofessional learning exactly? Why is it useful, and how can psychology academics integrate it into their courses with confidence? To discuss these questions and more, I'm joined today by Professor Rachel Roberts from the School of Psychology at the University of Adelaide. And Rachel is a member of APAC's Accreditation Assessment Committee. So, welcome, Rachel.
Good morning, David. Thank you. And I'm coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people.
Perhaps we should start by nailing down what we mean by interprofessional learning. And so, forgive me, I'm going to read out a couple of bits of the text. Because in the standards, professional competences for a programme at master's level include Criterion 3.11, work effectively with a range of professional and support staff in the workplace, and communicate and collaborate effectively within the bounds of ethical and legal requirements. And that's followed by Criterion 3.12, operate within the boundaries of their professional competence, consult with peers or other relevant sources where appropriate, and refer on to relevant other practitioners where appropriate. So is that really what it's all about?
Yes. The best ways for psychologists to support our clients almost always involves working with other disciplines. So when our clients' situations are complex, in particular, I think our best outcomes come from working together to support our clients towards their goals. So this makes it really important that our students learn how to work in collaboration with other professions.
And what sort of people will students need to collaborate with?
Look, it really depends about the kind of psychologists we're training. So whether they're general psychologists or whether they have an area of practice endorsement, it may be, for example, if they're a generally registered psychologist, they may be working with general practitioners. If they're a health psychologist, they might be working in health settings, and so they might be working with medical and nursing staff and other allied health. It really depends on the kind of psychologist that they have trained to be and where they end up working.
And some of these collaborations will be professional collaborations. Some may be more general. I mean, to what extent is there an onus on providers to help their students develop what is known as, and I know it's a contentious term in some areas, soft skills, dealing with not just with other professionals, but with a range of people they're going to come across in their professional practice. And that includes, I suppose, administration staff, members of accreditation organisations, etc., etc.
Look, absolutely key. Without that, we can't do our job and our students won't be able to go on and do their job. So absolutely core.
Okay. Now, you've actually done some interesting writing around this area, and you've written that the training of students to become psychologists differs markedly from that of other health professional programs, in part because it is not until the fifth year of study that students begin to interact with clients. And I'm going to quote you here. Year five is thus a transition year. They, the students, enter the program with no formal education in personal and professional behavior, such as taking responsibility for their own learning and professional development needs, engaging in self-reflection and supervision, and taking on feedback from clients, supervisors, and mentors. So, to what extent can interprofessional learning begin to deal with the challenges that you outlined there?
Look, I think interprofessional learning is just another of the steps up for our students as they come into our master's programs. For students in my school, they've had some introduction to IPL in their honours year, but it isn't an APAC standard until master's level. So students coming from other higher education providers might not have been introduced to the idea of interprofessional learning at all. I guess I want to note here that some higher education providers do a great job of introducing psychology students to interprofessional learning in their very first year as undergraduates. Some higher education providers have their psychology students doing units with other health profession students where they learn about those other professions, they learn with those other students, and it's often in allied health where that happens. But ideally, we're building our students' competencies kind of through their studies, from undergraduate through to master's level.
And so what does good interprofessional learning look like to you in your experience? And you say that you integrate it pretty early on at Adelaide. So what does this actually consist of?
Look, I think, like I said, ideally we would start not necessarily when our APAC competencies require it, but we'd start early in our students' journeys in psychology, but I appreciate that's not always possible. So perhaps I'll focus on where it is a requirement of our, in our program. So that's in our level three and four programs. So I think first, ideally, students are being taught by an interprofessional team. So they're not just being taught by psychology staff, that they're learning with other disciplines. So they're learning with students from other disciplines. They're learning about the other disciplines. And I think ideally they're having a chance to work on, at least initially, simulated case studies. And they're working on those case studies as teams with the other health profession students. I do know from our own personal experience that timetabling, for example, is really difficult. Getting together students in person or even online, lining our timetables up across different disciplines can be really tough. But I think if you can do that, that personal contact between our students makes the learning very real for them. I have seen examples where small groups of students from different disciplines work together and they arrange the times themselves to work around their own program commitments, so that can work well. And then I think students should have the opportunity to work with other professions while they're on placement. And we should make sure that they're competent to do this before they graduate out of our programs. But they need to have interprofessional learning covered in their coursework before they're expected to go out and do it in a real life setting. Some other things about what I think good IPL looks like. I think and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, it really depends on the program that our students are in. So my school has got programs in clinical psychology, health psychology, and organisational psychology and human factors. And so obviously the key disciplines that we want our students to know about are different for each of these three programs. Our organisational and human factors students need, for example, to be able to work well with human resource professionals. We have a lot of our organisational and human factors students, when they graduate, they go and work for a large defence organisation in South Australia, the Defence Science and Technology Group. And so we have staff from that group teaching into our units. Our students do placements there. Our students do their research projects in collaboration with that group. So that's a way of really building their interprofessional skills during their program for the kind of places that those particular students are likely to end up working. And I've mentioned already, for example, that our health psychs need to be able to work with staff from a range of health settings. And our clinical students particularly need to be able to work well with general practice and psychiatry. That's really important. The other thing that we think about is our clinical students often end up working with children where they need to be able to work really well with school staff. And so that's another group of professionals that we need to make sure our students are well able to work with. One more thing I would mention is that our psychologists need to be able to work with each other and understand the competencies of other psychologists and psychologists with other area of practice endorsements. So one of the things that we do is that our students do some of their learning together, and some of this is learning about what each other's roles and skills are. And I know a number of programs across Australia do that.
That sounds very thorough, and obviously very, very useful, setting students up for success further down the track. I was recently reading a paper which argued that small-scale interprofessional learning initiatives may be associated with improvements in students' overall interprofessional socialisation and values, and perceived ability, value and comfort in working with individuals from other health professions. So, by the way, I will put links to that paper and the paper of yours, which I referenced earlier. I'll put that in the description to the podcast. But does that paper's findings, does your experience bear that out?
Absolutely, yes. So I think that if we expose our students to interprofessional learning, we really give them the message that this is a valued and expected part of psychological practice. And we also give them the confidence to work with other professions. So absolutely.
Psychologists are often employed in multidisciplinary teams, and yet in Australia it's not yet been commonplace for psychologists in training to be exposed to interprofessional learning. And obviously that's changing. That's why we're discussing criterion 3.9 of the standards. But is it changing fast enough? What more could be done to ensure interprofessional learning and practice are included as required learning outcomes?
Look, I agree it's changing, and it's changing not only because of the psychology standards now having it as a part of it, but also other professions are now requiring it as well. So in many higher education providers, there's been resources and effort to improve how we do this across all of the different professions that are now needing to do this better. My experience as an assessor is that academic staff absolutely understand the importance and value of interprofessional learning, and many are working to include it in their units. They're also working to include it in their teaching and making sure that they assess it as well, because obviously things need to be taught, they need to be in unit learning outcomes, and we need to assess them. But, and I'm an academic as well, we're busy, we've got lots of competing priorities. There were a range of new things in our most recent update of our APAC standards that we all needed to pay attention to. And university processes are often really slow, so changes can take a while to move through the kind of administrative requirements. In my experience, the higher education providers that have done this really well have often dedicated staff and resources to it, working across their schools and disciplines. And so I think that seems to help, putting some extra resources towards it, particularly when it's kind of a step up for programs that haven't done it very well or very much today.
And wearing your hat as a member of APAC's AAC, you obviously get to see, either close up or through other colleagues' reports, the workings of a whole range of providers over time. Now, without identifying anybody good, bad or indifferent, how would you rate the progress of the sector overall? I mean, are we talking about 20% good, 20% lagging, and 60% perhaps a little bit, you know, sort of marooned in the middle? Or what's the picture?
Look, I think there are some really fabulous examples of good practice out there. I think there are some higher education providers, there's a handful of higher education providers that are doing it in their programs really well. I think everybody's doing it to some extent, but there's probably some room for kind of more integration and more opportunities for our students to actually learn with other students rather than just learning from psychology about other disciplines. So, you know, I think for a number of our higher education providers, there's ways that things could still be improved to do it better.
Okay. Now, I know the question of simulation in any context is always a bit vexed. It's always a good way to start an argument, I think. But in the context of interprofessional learning, can simulation be as good as the real thing? Is it a genuine substitute, or do we always need human-to-human interaction?
I think simulation can be even better than the real thing.
Oh, fighting talk.
Absolutely. So, and look, the reason for that is because I think our students, and, you know, it's not just me that thinks this, our students tell us this, they appreciate realistic simulation where they know if they're doing something for the first time and they make a mistake, it isn't having a negative impact on real clients. So that they appreciate the realism of simulation and the chance to, you know, to make mistakes without causing harm. And I think this, and not just me, this is what our students tell us as well, it helps to build their confidence and their competency before they see real clients. But ideally, programs will use both simulation and time with real clients on placement to build student competency. So actually, I think we need both.
No, I can see that argument. I can see why the students would feel that there's a certain safety net. And well, that's less controversial than I thought it might be. But thank you for that.
I should say not all of our students love simulation, so it's not universal, but in general that's what they tell us.
Okay, well, we can only draw lessons from that. Perhaps my last question: some higher education providers might be taking the first steps towards, you know, thoroughly integrating effective interprofessional learning into their psychology programs. In this context, what is low-hanging fruit? What are the easy wins? And if you were to recommend a step-by-step approach towards best practice, what would it look like?
So most Australian higher education providers train at least a couple of kinds of psychologists already. So interprofessional learning within psychology is probably something that our providers are already doing, where they're learning about each other, they're learning to improve their collaboration kind of across different kinds of psychology. The next thing I'd suggest, though, is to see if you can collaborate with other disciplines within your higher education provider. So, as an example, in my institution, at the point where we were looking to do a bit more in this space, the dental school was also wanting to introduce interprofessional learning for their students. And so we developed IPL with psychology and dentistry students working together. There were concerns about things like anxiety and adherence to kind of dental care that were things that both psychology and dental students could work together on. So I think, yeah, look for opportunities within your own higher education provider, knowing that there's probably other disciplines who are looking for opportunities to do this as well. At the moment, I actually don't think we know what best practice in IPL looks like in psychology yet. We haven't been doing it for that long. So my suggestion would be benchmark what you're doing against other higher education providers, other psychology disciplines and schools, but also across disciplines. So there are other disciplines, and I'm thinking, for example, of medicine and nursing, certainly in our institution, who've been doing IPL for much, much longer than we have. And that should help us improve how we do this and kind of work towards having best practice guidelines in psychology. The final thing I would suggest is evaluate what you do, publish it, present it, share it, so that we can all learn together about what good practice might look like and what's possible in this area.
Thank you for that, and thank you for sharing your experience in Adelaide. I think that's part of you walking the walk, you know, as you say, to see how you can improve, share it, and we can all in the sector learn as a result. Thank you, Rachel. Did you have any last comments you wanted to throw in before we finish?
Just to thank people for listening and to let people know that I'm really happy to kind of chat offline about the issues and examples and to share our own experiences.
Okay, that's really appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks, David.